General Motors filed a racketeering lawsuit Wednesday against Fiat Chrysler. GM accused its smaller rival of making bribes over many years to corrupt the bargaining process with the United Auto Workers. GM said it will seek, quote, substantial damages as part of the remedy.
Inventors of the material Woodley say it's made from cellulose harvested from trees grown in sustainably managed forests in Finland. The process transforms wood into pearl-like granules that can then be made into clear plastic film for use in packaging. It's designed to be recyclable, though it's not biodegradable. But Woodley say the energy recovered from the products yields 70% less fossil-based carbon dioxide than burning traditional plastics.
A Swedish prosecutor says they are not proceeding with an investigation into an allegation of rape against WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange. The move came after a review of the evidence, with the deputy chief prosecutor saying that while the complainant's evidence was deemed credible and reliable, after nearly a decade, witnesses' memories had faded.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Thursday. It's November the 21st, and it's 5:10 in the morning. Thank you for tuning in for another edition of The Opening Bell. We've got another business day going on, and some developing news in the world of business that we'll get to momentarily. We'll also hit the markets here coming up. And on the program today, it's Thought Leader Thursday. And from Associated Bank, this morning we'll welcome in Doug Myers, who's the private banking manager, regional manager at Associated Bank. And we'll talk about some banking trends, some that might affect you as well and your money as we move forward. That's at about 5:18 this morning. A little bit later in the program, Madhu Unnikrishnan will be here. He's the editor at Skift Airline Weekly. We'll talk about Chicago-based Boeing and its showing at the Dubai Air Show in terms of orders, picking up some orders for the troubled 737 MAX aircraft. So we'll talk to Madhu about that and how important that is for Boeing. So stay with us as we move through the 5 o'clock hour. We'll also have the latest news, weather, sports, and traffic as well. So here we go. The developing news I'm talking about this morning involves Charles Schwab in talks to buy rival TD Ameritrade. It's reportedly a deal that would massively shake up the brokerage industry. This is being reported exclusively so far this morning by CNBC, so we'll keep watching that. On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward a flat open on Wall Street a little bit later this morning. Dow futures are down just fractionally this morning. Same story at the S&P and NASDAQ. In Europe, the market day in the red. In London, off by more than 0.5%. In Germany, off by nearly 0.25%. In France, off by nearly 1/3. The trading day in Asia coming to a close as well, with the Nikkei off nearly 109 points, nearly 0.5%. Stocks in Hong Kong down nearly 422 points. The Hang Seng down nearly 1.5%. The Shanghai in China off nearly 0.25%. Oil in the U.S. is trading at $56.96 a barrel, which is off just about 5 cents a barrel. Some other big news this morning. Gary Jones is done at the United Auto Workers as union president. He resigned last night as the UAW International Executive Board was moving forward on a procedure to remove him and Vance Pearson for their positions and expel them from the union. Jones' attorneys issued a statement saying the now former union leader appreciates the support provided to him and his family and friends, added that Jones worked his way up from a factory worker 44 years ago to union president. Jones is currently under federal investigation in a bribery case. PayPal is paying big bucks to acquire a technology platform for shopping and rewards. The digital payment company announced it's going to pay around $4 billion for Honey Science Corporation. The deal is expected to close early next year. Honey Science is best known as a discovery tool that helps people find deals while shopping online. Officials say it has helped shoppers find more than $1 billion in savings in the past year alone. The deal is PayPal's most expensive acquisition ever. And Uber is taking safety to the next level by recording rides. Drivers can set up the feature automatically, while passengers will have to turn it on through the app. Neither will be notified when recording starts or be able to access the recordings. Uber began a video recording program in Texas in July, is also doing it in Florida and Tennessee. The audio feature, though, will be tested in Mexico and Brazil next month before it comes to the United States. Also this morning, we'll be watching a couple of key releases today in terms of the economy. The weekly jobless numbers are coming out today. We'll also get a look at existing home sales. Yesterday, the Federal Reserve released the minutes of the last meeting of the Fed from the late October meeting. Shows the Federal Open Market Committee members feel the U.S. economy in a fairly strong position. Fed officials noted a healthy labor market coupled with strong consumer spending, uncertainty over global developments, and muted inflation were cited as key factors in last month's decision to cut interest rates by about a quarter of a point. It's Thought Leader Thursday here on The Opening Bell. Joining us this morning is Doug Myers, Senior Vice President and Private Banking Regional Manager at Associated Bank. Doug, good morning. Welcome back to The Opening Bell.
Thank you, Steve. Glad to be here.
I want to focus on technology today, the wrap-up to 2019. I know we do this with you every year. Kind of pull out the crystal ball a little bit, but first I want you to look back at the year and tell us about what things in your field, in your industry, did you think would happen and got right, and what didn't you get right this year in predictions?
Well, it's certainly a fast-moving world, and we didn't expect a lot of things to happen this year. Technology, as you referenced earlier, is certainly playing a huge role in the evolution of banking. And every day we're faced with new platforms, new technologies. The cybersecurity issue is huge in banking. And every day the fraudsters are out to get us in one way or another through technology. And we have to be smarter and better and ahead of them. And it's a constant battle to keep up with the technologies that help us to battle the fraudsters, to give people what they want in their banking, their mobile banking. That's certainly evolving every day. So there's a lot of issues going on in banking.
There's also a lot of good stuff, too. I saw one figure with artificial intelligence being the driver of the conversation that perhaps artificial intelligence, once it's sort of fully integrated into the banking industry, could eventually be a cost savings to the industry of $447 billion.
Yeah, it's a huge number, Steve, and we're starting to see artificial intelligence, play out in the banking world, especially in its beginnings of customer service. Because when you call into a bank, or maybe you're at the teller window, artificial intelligence is going to help the teller decide what might be a good product for you. On the customer service side, for example, if you call in with password issues every time, the artificial intelligence is going to kick in and say, maybe you need help with passwords. And that's one simple example, but it's going to create opportunities that the artificial intelligence sees you might be a good user of in our product set. And so it is helping with us in the cross-selling. It's also helping with customer service, as I said. Big issue. It's evolving very rapidly.
The customer service thing is really interesting, because there are some products that whether you call into a bank or text, have a chat message with the bank, the chat conversation could be completely artificial intelligence, couldn't it?
Absolutely. And we've all been on a customer service line where you think you're talking to a human being and you're not. And that certainly is evolving into better technologies and more. It's getting more to be better and better.
And back to the fraudsters part of this, artificial intelligence could really be the secret weapon to catch all of those people.
Can certainly help. The fraudsters are finding more and more ways to get into our systems, to get into our clients' bank accounts, and we have to really stay vigilant, and we spend a lot of time and energy in protecting our clients' accounts and protecting the bank's assets. And it's just every day there's something that comes up, and we just have to spend a lot of time and energy on combating that. And we have a lot of wins and we have some losses because of that.
So I want to talk also about big data, whether it's cloud computing, whether it's something on the ground that's not in a cloud. How does big data, how are banks not only gathering but using data?
Well, that's a great question. And big data is actually related to artificial intelligence, where you have all these millions of transactions and you've got individuals doing these transactions. And so big data can analyze certain trends and analytics through the through the systems, and big data will tell us, for example, that people might want a certain kind of checking account, or they might want a certain kind of investment, or they might want a certain kind of money market account or savings account that we don't offer or that we offered at one time. And so big data can go in and analyze a lot of trends that help us in offering the products that our customers want. Kind of related to artificial intelligence, but not exactly. It's kind of a step further. Cloud computing is also big now in banking because as cloud computing becomes more and more, it releases the data on your internal servers and moves it to the cloud where you're, in fact, renting certain softwares that might be a little more advantageous to consumers versus what the bank has on its internal platform.
I've seen also more analysts in the banking industry and futurists talk about open banking, and that's going to continue to be a trend in 2020 and beyond.
It's a big trend, and what open banking refers to is the integration of some of these fintech, high-tech banking companies merging with the banks. For example, I know a lot of banks that are using some of the fintech platforms for business banking, for example, for credit scoring and consumer loans, and they're able to make very quick decisions, and the banks are partnering with these to, number one, save money and be more efficient, but to be able, once again, to offer more product sets to the consumer. Loans is a good example, consumer loans, business loans works under some of these platforms as well.
To give our listeners an idea of just how many potential things that could be involved here, the study by Deloitte found that there were nearly 820 functionalities that cover the banking journey. So I guess that means 820 possible different actions that consumer can take at a bank that this would help streamline.
Absolutely. And I'm surprised that they didn't say more because these fintech companies are growing more and more and they're becoming more viable. And once again, the banks are seeing that this could be a good opportunity to partner with them and offer, once again, a better product set to their consumers and their clients.
But there is a hesitation by some in the banking industry, isn't there, about how quickly to move into this area?
Well, there is. And, you know, in the wealth management business, which is my expertise, automation is great, but we still say, and it's still important to have that one-on-one relationship as people struggle with their investments and they struggle with their whole financial posture as they have different stages in life they move through, you know, the kids in college and then retirement and starting out. We have found the one-on-one personal relationship with a financial counselor beats any technology that anybody can offer. And I think that's important, and you're never going to get away from the one-on-one importance of that relationship with a financial counselor.
Yeah, even as we're talking about the big names like Google and Facebook and Apple all getting into the banking, and I've even heard the discussion of a super app that has everything at your fingertips. Are we ready for that?
Well, I think we're ready for that under certain circumstances, but at the same time, and that's going to commoditize banking a little bit. But once again, if you step back and say, look, I need help with my investments, I need help with my financial planning, I need help with getting to where I want to be in 25 years when I want to retire, an app's not going to do that. A one-on-one relationship with a financial counselor is going to do that. And I think that's so important when we have these discussions about technology. Technology certainly helps us as financial counselors be more have a better expertise in the field, but at the same time, it's not going to replace that one-on-one relationship.
Talk to us about the year you've had in wealth management. Has it been a good year for your clients?
The market has been very strong. We've had a lot of volatility early on, but it's picked up the last quarter here, and it's been a very strong year in terms of investments. Not to say that we've had a lot of turmoil and dust swirling around, so to speak, with the political environment, the tariff situation. But overall, it's been a very good year in the terms of investments. Banking has been a challenged industry this year. You know, we anticipated interest rates to go up. That, in fact, did not happen. In fact, the other thing happened that interest rates went down three times or four times, and that has challenged the banks. As rates go down, margins decrease, and it's harder for banks to make a profit. And so, you know, it's a challenging industry, but we're healthy, and I think the banks are much more healthy than 10 years ago when we went through the downturn. And I think we're looking for a little rate relief, hopefully, next year. I hope we're looking at a stable economy next year. So we're very optimistic about the future.
What would be the play, the investment play here? Do you think you change anything going into 2020?
Well, you always want to look and tweak a little bit and adjust. You know, you want to stay diversified. You want to enjoy all the different aspects in terms of the different capital structures. As an example, short-term equities and long-term equities and things, large cap, small cap, things like that. But I think you just want to stay diversified, and you want to continue to have active discussions with your financial counselor.
German banks are imposing negative rates on corporate clients. Are negative rates coming to the United States?
I hope not. We'll see. Yeah. But I don't think so.
Well, Doug, it's always great chatting with you. How can people get a hold of you and have a one-on-one if they want?
They can call me directly at 312-544-4600. And hope you and your family have a happy Thanksgiving next week, Steve.
And happy Thanksgiving to you as well.
Thank you.
Doug Myers, it is our Thought Leader Conversation. Remember, you can listen to our past conversations at WGN Radio. And head over to the WGN Opening Bell page at WGNradio.com. You can also head to AssociatedBank.com/thought leadership. You can meet more of the thought leaders there and listen to more conversation. Doug is the Senior Vice President and Private Banking Regional Manager at Associated Bank.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here on our Thursday edition of the Opening Bell. Our top business news story this morning is one still developing. Discount stock brokerage Charles Schwab in talks to buy competitor TD Ameritrade, a deal that could be announced today. Now, according to CNBC, Schwab and TD Ameritrade are the two biggest publicly traded discount brokers, and a merger would create a colossus with nearly $5 trillion in combined assets. Schwab, TD Ameritrade, and other brokerage have eliminated commissions on trades, and the industry is now scrambling to find ways to maintain profits. General Motors is suing Fiat Chrysler, alleging the Italian-American automaker and its former CEO corrupted negotiations with the United Auto Workers Union in 2011 and 2015. GM accuses the late CEO of the company, Sergio Marchionne, of creating a scheme that has led to federal investigation of the UAW and auto executives. The investigation has led to several indictments and convictions and will reportedly include the former UAW president and General Motors Director John Ashton. He's facing charges of receiving kickbacks and taking bribes. GM is seeking unspecified damages in that lawsuit. Google is making some changes to its political advertising policy. The tech giant announced it is limiting election ad audiences targeting to categories such as gender, age, and postal code location. The company will also be inspecting ads for any false claims. Google's announcement comes after two very different ones from social media platforms. Facebook says it doesn't plan to fact-check ads from politicians, while Twitter has decided to ban political ads altogether. The Trump administration has approved licenses for U.S. companies to sell tech to Chinese firm Huawei. The Commerce Department is sending out notices of approval. Huawei is the largest telecom maker in the world and the second largest smartphone manufacturer. U.S. companies have made billions selling products to them, but that ended last year when it was put on a blacklist as the trade war between the countries heated up. President Trump announced in June some sales would be allowed. Let's get an update now on agribusiness, and with that, here's Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. There's no doubt that fading hope for a U.S.-China trade agreement before the end of the year had an impact on livestock, grain, and Wall Street yesterday. Chicago Board of Trade wheat managed to close slightly higher, but corn futures hit a two-month low. Soybean futures hit a seven-week low. The numbers for the nearby December wheat contract up 3 cents a bushel. the December corn contract down 3¾ cents, and the November soybean contract dropped 7 cents a bushel yesterday. No change in the livestock trade at the Mercantile Exchange. The lean hog contract down the $3 daily limit on February, April, May, and July contracts. Cattle managed to close a little bit higher, up 57 cents a hundredweight. Feeder cattle unchanged. Japan halfway through approval of that U.S.-Japan trade deal negotiated by Prime Minister Abe and President Trump in September. And that agreement, if approved by the other house in the Diet in Japan, would lower the tariff on U.S. beef from 38% to 9%, and it would remove or reduce its tariff on U.S. pork trade with that country. But the handling of that trade agreement was opposed, and it angered Democrats, House Democrats, who blasted the Trump administration for not consulting sufficiently with Congress while negotiating that mini trade deal. That's Ag Biz. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. A whistleblowing flight controller says changes in air traffic control procedures at a major center in Florida raises the risk of a mid-air collision, but the FAA is disputing the claim. The U.S. Office of Special Counsel says it notified the White House and Congress of the controller's allegations. The whistleblower's complaint focuses on changes by managers at a center near Jacksonville, Florida, that controls flights over parts of five states and the Gulf of Mexico. The FAA says the procedures in use at the Florida facility are used elsewhere across the country and comply with its standards for altitude separation of planes. Joining us this morning via Skype from San Francisco is Madhu Unnikrishnan, who's the editor at Skift Airline Weekly. Madhu, good morning. Welcome back to the Opening Bell.
Well, thanks for having me, Steve. It's a pleasure to be back.
I want to focus in first, because we've been doing a lot of reporting on this over the last few days, of Boeing's performance at the Dubai Air Show. They haven't been doing so well against Airbus, have they?
Well, you know, there's a couple of things here. One is, of course, Boeing has a lot of issues, as we all know, in the market right now, thanks to the 737 MAX. But, you know, Boeing and Airbus have typically taken a differing perspectives on air shows. And the Dubai air shows every other year, fall of odd-numbered years, so 2019, Airbus has typically sort of saved, you know, orders keep rolling in for aircraft throughout the quarter, throughout the year. And Airbus typically saves its order announcements for air shows so it can make a big splash at the air show. And Boeing has traditionally sort of just announced orders as they come in. So it does sound, you know, the order numbers for Airbus always sound really impressive at air shows, and that's because they've sort of saved it up for the PR benefits. However, that being said, you know, there was a very important order that Boeing announced, and that was an order from Sun Express, which is a joint venture between Turkish Airlines and Lufthansa, based in Turkey, for 737 MAXs. So it's a vote of confidence for the aircraft, even though it's grounded and it's been in the news for all the wrong reasons recently.
Yeah, and there has also been some orders for the 787-9 Dreamliner. I know that had made a big splash over the last few days as well.
That's right. An airline in Ghana ordered 787 Dreamliners from Boeing. And that aircraft has also been in the news recently thanks to some engine issues with its Rolls-Royce engines. But you know, this is once again a vote of confidence for Boeing, and also a comment on how difficult it is to order aircraft. And let me explain that. So if you wanted to start Steve's airline tomorrow, and you wanted to buy a bunch of Airbus A320s or Boeing 737s, you couldn't, right? You'd have to put an order in with one of the aircraft manufacturers, and then you'd have to wait several years as they work through their backlog of thousands of aircraft. So the market is tight, you know, supply is tight, and airlines don't have a lot of choice when they want to buy aircraft. They have, you know, they can buy large aircraft from Airbus and Boeing, and smaller aircraft from Embraer and what used to be Bombardier, but is now, you know, the Airbus A220. So it's a duopoly, and there's not a lot of choice for airlines that need to buy aircraft to build out their networks or to grow.
As we look at all of this as a whole, I know Boeing has had these issues that are and even ongoing with the 737 NG version with some of these engines that are going to have to be redone on Southwest. Do you think things are going to get better for Boeing in 2020?
Absolutely. It's a very impressive company. It's a very well managed, well run company. It has excellent engineers. The thing with the Southwest are the what you mentioned about some Southwest aircraft needing, I believe, some engine cowling replacement. These issues pop up from time to time with all aircraft. And, the FAA or the regulatory agencies put out these what are called notice to airmen when they've discovered an issue that needs to be rectified. The thing with the 737 is that, you know, for the most part, these sort of ongoing issues get addressed and they might get reported on in the B2B or trade press, but they don't really make it out into the larger world. And the thing that's going on with the 737 is it's under the microscope. Boeing and this particular aircraft, NG, MAX, all its variants are under the microscope because of these high-profile accidents earlier this year. It is an issue that Boeing has to address, but it isn't as much of an issue as probably would, you know, in the normal state of affairs, it wouldn't have been as much of a scrutinized issue as it is now.
Let's move on to another story that kind of jumped off the page at me, and this is from skiff.com. The Airbus targeting the early 2030s for its first emission-free regional aircraft. How big of a deal is this?
It is a big deal for sure. I mean, the technology has moved to the point where, you know, a hybrid electric propulsion aircraft could be on the market in the 2020s. That's huge. That's very impressive. Now, note that it is a regional aircraft. So this is a small aircraft. You're not going to get on this thing to fly from Chicago to Sydney. You know, it might be Chicago to Columbus, Ohio or something. You know, it's going to be a short route. And that's a function of the technology and where we are with battery technology and electric propulsion. I'm going to go out on a limb here. I was born in the 1970s. I'm going to go out on a limb and say in my lifetime, we will still have jet fuel powered aircraft will still be the primary way we fly between, say, Chicago and Sydney. So I think it's a milestone and it's definitely something to be celebrated. But jet fuel is going to be around for a long time. And you know, another way to look at that is the people who are buying that Ghanaian airline that bought 787s. Those aircraft, provided the airline survives, those aircraft are going to be in service for about 25 years. You know, and then they have a secondary life elsewhere. You know, we're talking about assets that have a long, long lifespan. So even though the hybrid electric aircraft that might come to the market in the next decade is impressive, we're not anywhere close to an emission-free future for air travel.
Right, because one of the things that's at play here, I mean, you talking about getting the plane off the ground and into the air is one thing, but there are all kinds of technologies on board an aircraft that would need to adapt to this new carbon-free footprint, wouldn't they?
Oh, absolutely. And you know, you also have to think if we take that example of, say, Chicago to Sydney San Francisco, where I'm based, to Sydney, that's a flight that's pushing, you know, 15, 16, 17 hours. Those engines have to run for that entire amount of time. There's not very much there's nothing else out there that can replace the amount of energy that jet fuel packs into a relatively small volume. I mean, if you think of the batteries that you need for your phone, for example, and how long the charge lasts on that, and you multiply that by the weight that an aircraft can carry and how big the engines have to be and how much power they have to generate and use for a flight that length. I mean, it's really beyond my comprehension. Unless there's some quantum leap in battery technology, I can't see jet fuel going away anytime soon.
There's a story in the Skift Airline Weekly, which you edit, about Air India being up for sale again. Talk to us a little bit about that.
I've been covering the airline industry at various publications for, you know, almost 20 years, and the story. I feel like it's Groundhog Day. I could write this story over and over. The issue here is, so Air India is owned by the Indian government, and in previous years, the government has tried to sell a stake of Air India to somebody. No one's ever been interested. The airline has a lot of debt, has a restive labor force, and was kind of seen over the decades, especially in the 60s, 70s, and maybe the 80s, as sort of a jobs creation program by the Indian government. So no one wanted it. But this, what's different this time is the Indian government is saying, we'll sell 100% of this airline. Just, we'll figure out the debt, whatever, but we want to fully privatize this airline. And that's kind of huge. And there are some airlines that have not said, no one's come out and said, yeah, we want it. But, Qatar Airways is said to be interested, possibly Singapore Airlines, maybe the Tata Group, a large industrial concern in India that owns, I believe, Jaguar and Land Rover, has said to be interested. And funnily enough, the Tata Group actually launched Air India or ran Air India back in the 40s and 50s, I believe. So so this time could be different.
Why would Air India be attractive to a buyer?
That's a good question. I mean, as I mentioned, it has a lot of debt and a restive labor force. That's usually a recipe for – that's usually, red flags to stay away. One thing that Air India does have and is its bilateral air service rights with a whole bunch of countries, right? I mean, for most routes in the world, if you want to fly from, say, Delhi to China, that's negotiated between governments, the number of routes that can be flown, the number of the cities that between the two countries, et cetera. And Air India comes with a lot of legacy route authorities. And in addition, it has the right of first refusal for any route authority. So from here on out. So if, say, the Indian government negotiates new routes with just pulling this out of the air, but, Turkey, Air India has the first right to say, yeah, we want to fly that route, or no, we're going to pass on that, and some other Indian airline can then bid on that route to fly it. So, it's similar to what back in the 80s, Pan Am had all these route authorities to Asia when Pan Am was struggling, it sold those route authorities to United, and that's why United has such a great route presence or route network in Asia, similar to, Northwest had all these routes to Asia that Delta inherited when it merged with Northwest in the last decade. So that's really what is sort of the crown jewel that Air India has to offer to any potential buyer.
All right, Madhu, a good conversation as always. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, Steve. Thanks for having me on.
Madhu Unnikrishnan, editor at Skift Airline Weekly. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Thursday, November 21st. The weekly look at first-time jobless claims leads off today's economic reports. Analysts expect to see a slight decline with 221,000 workers filing initial claims for unemployment benefits. Existing home sales for October due today as well. Building industry analysts forecast an annual rate of 5.48 million, a nearly 2% increase over September. And on the earnings calendar, Macy's, Gap, Nordstrom, Ross Stores, Williams-Sonoma, all reporting quarterly financial earnings.